Welcome back, everybody. It's another episode of the Balls, Buckets, and Bull podcast. I'm your host, Joey Morales. Sorry to come from you a little bit late. We had a little bit of issues. I was out of town for a week for work. I was also sick. The Golden Voice was not where it was. I brought back the guest from last week, Derek.
Let me get a bunch of redhead sluts over here.
How are you doing, man?
Hey, Joey. What's up, man? Thanks for having me back.
All right. So we're going to talk. We're going to talk a lot of stuff today. We got a ton of work to do. We're going to talk a little bit about the Melo trade. We're going to talk about the Cowboys implosion pretty much in Denver. We're going to talk about KD's fake Twitter accounts. But first, let's talk about that amazing game we saw last Saturday between UT and USC. So UT versus USC, it was like, you know, we talked about it. You called it, Derek. You asked for a close game and you got it. The Horns held in and they came close to taking this one. It ultimately goes to USC in a double overtime win, 27-24. But, you know, you really can't say enough about how well UT's played, how well UT's defense played this game. You know, talk about a bad spot for most teams, you know, going west, playing a top four ranked school with a freshman quarterback. For the Horns to not get blown out in this game and come within seconds of winning is absolutely remarkable. You know, Derek, you were there, so why don't you go ahead and give us your first-hand account?
Amazing environment, man. The USC fans are really crazy. Being at LA Memorial Coliseum, amazing game. Honestly, I bet, I remember, like $25 on the UT line. And I just wanted to be close, you know. I thought we were going to get smoked, and they made it really close. And I was talking a lot of trash, drank a lot of beers, and we ended up dropping the game with 50 seconds left. Darnold showing off. But, dude, I have to say, UT really showed up that game. I don't know if it's a combination of UT playing above what they should or USC kind of dropping the ball, but either way, really entertaining game. I thought UT won the trenches throughout the game, and honestly, really entertaining all around, man. I love the environment in LA, and I can't wait for next season.
No kidding. So let's talk about the UT quarterback, Sam Ehlinger, who was 21 for 40 for 298 yards, two touchdowns for two interceptions. You know, he delivered a clutch touchdown pass with less than a minute to go to take the lead. You know, he played good, I guess, considering all things, but, you know, he's a freshman. But that fumble at the end of the game was a huge disappointment for what was otherwise a sloppy game. And then, you know, he turned it on towards the end, played a really good last couple minutes. So, you know, there's still question marks there, but, you know, he did keep his team within striking distance, I guess. And, you know, it like I said, that's a bad spot to play for any freshman quarterback. I really wanted to talk about the UT defense. You know, they held USC to 17 points in the game, you know, in the regulation. You know, they kept them on to 33% on third down. They made all three stops on fourth down, including one at the one-yard line. They held them to only 71 rushing yards to 1.9 yards per carry, forced two turnovers. You know, they had that one big blunder at the end of the half, but otherwise I think they played out of this world. So what do you think about UT's defense? Do you think, Derek, that they can keep it up going forward?
I was very impressed by our defense. Like I said before, I thought we won the trenches. I thought we were putting good pressure on them. Darnold's going to be number one or number two pick this year. So amazing. And he basically backpacked that team. What I noticed, and I don't follow USC that much, they only have one wide receiver that seemed to catch the ball. They have like four receivers, but only one guy was making big plays. So Darnold is single-handedly backpacking that team. Our defense stepped it up. I thought USC was going to score 40, 50. And man, we did a good job. I'm impressed.
All right, so then the last thing I wanted to talk about, you know, is just USC's offense before that game was, you know, pretty good. They scored 42 and 49 points. You know, you got to wonder, though, where this was for the Maryland game for UT. You know, where was this defense? Where was this effort? But it's still a great sign to see from Tom Herman. Hopefully that this defense can play close to this level each week. And if they do, they're going to have a shot against the very good offenses of OU and OSU. So, all right, so let's talk about the Cowboys' just disaster that happened last Sunday. We're recording this a little later in the week, but, you know, it's still worth talking about. They lost 42-17 in just an absolute clobbering. They just looked awful. You know, this team is built to run the ball, and I think run it well. You know, running the ball makes so many things better for this team. It masks so many deficiencies. The Broncos control the time of possession, 34-26, which is not what the Cowboys want to happen. The Cowboys only rushed for 24 yards. Dak had two interceptions, including a pick six. The defense was just picked apart by Trevor Siemian, who's really not known for being a quarterback you can't defend against. The Broncos went 9 for 15 on third down, averaged 4.6 yards per carry. Siemian completed 22-32 passes for four touchdowns to only one interception. You know, it's tough to win in Denver, I think, for many teams. And I think that defense kind of, you know, combined with the altitude can, you know, can hold up, you know, can hold up against the best offenses. You know, I think Denver can just really stop anybody going in there. But I really think it was kind of a kick in the ass the Cowboys needed. But the issues in the defense that I kind of brought up in the preseason are still there. But what do you think about the Cowboys' loss last week, Derek?
Well, you know, being a Texans fan, it was pretty fun to see you guys lose. But other than that, man, that was an ugly game. A couple of comments I had about it was, well, I mean, Denver's defense is still amazing. You know, they're playing really well. It's not like Simeon's a monster quarterback, but he played well. One thing about Dak that I think is pretty interesting is it's pretty obvious he's not a flashy player. And so if the Cowboys go down and they're not getting the running game involved, he's not going to catch up. You
What's
know,
up, Derek? He threw
like 50 times and you know, that's just not the Cowboys game. So it's pretty ugly. But I don't want anybody to freak out. I think Cowboys going to be okay. You know, they needed that. And, it's pretty obvious that, they got smoked that game, but I don't think it's over. I think Cowboys are fine. You know, they'll play well the rest of the season, but it's very obvious that the Cowboys, if they're not ahead in the beginning and they're not playing their solid game, they can get rattled real quick.
Yeah, you know, I really think Scott Linehan needs to get this offense back in gear. I mean, Zeke only got 9 carries, and he can only manage 8 yards with them. He struggled getting the ball at the goal line. You know, the one thing I did want to bring up is that one play where it looked like he kind of gave up and didn't hustle. Obviously, he didn't hustle on that play, but I can understand why he was frustrated. He hasn't gotten the ball like he should be. He hasn't gotten the goal line carries like he should. You know, the Cowboys are struggling offensively. A lot, you know, even the game against the Giants, they a lot of field goals, not many touchdowns. You know, but he still needs to be a leader and show more effort. But the Cowboys would have lost either way on that play, and it was just a bad spot for them. You know, coming off a great opening season win. Going into Denver, it's just most teams are going to struggle there. All right, so we were going to have this podcast a little earlier so that way we could talk before these games happen for the eliminator picks, but we still kind of wanted to just let people know what we had chosen. You know, the three that I had on my list were Steelers versus Chicago, Packers versus Cincinnati, and Dolphins versus Jets. And man, talk about an interesting week in the NFL so far. I mean, everything was close. Derek, what did you pick? And did you have a little nervous sweat going down to the end like I did?
Man, I picked the Packers over the Bengals because Bengals have looked so bad. But man, they had to squeak one out in overtime. I mean, they still won. But I also had Patriots versus the Texans. I didn't want to pick against my team though, so I didn't pick them. That game was actually closer than what people thought it would be. Patriots still won, but man, yeah, I had Packers and they barely squeaked one out there.
Yeah, originally I had Dolphins, and then I just, you know, I started thinking that it's just really tough to trust Jay Cutler even against the Jets, and sure enough, look what happened. So I ultimately went with the Packers as well. You know, one of the other common eliminator picks was the Patriots, and to see how close they kept it, or, you know, they almost lost. Same thing with the Packers, but ultimately squeaked out of there. So let's go ahead and get Derek's story. Derek has a good story for us to talk about. Interesting, CNN and boobs. So Derek, I'm going to go ahead and leave it to you, buddy. Talk about it.
Well, I drive an hour and a half to work every morning, and I listen to Clay Travis in the morning, so I have very similar opinions to him. Turns out he got invited to CNN, and he was talking about how ESPN's ratings are declining, and there's a couple theories behind that. I personally think that ESPN's getting way too into politics. Jemele Hill, a big host over at ESPN, said that everybody that voted for Donald Trump is white supremacist, and he's a white supremacist, his cabinet's a white supremacist. Well, you can say whatever you want, but they fired Curt Schilling a year ago for saying the bathroom bill in North Carolina was he didn't like it, and he got fired. So if you're calling everybody supremacist, half your audience, how are you not fired? There seems to be a double standard going on. It seems to be like a liberal sort of agenda with ESPN, and I think that's why the ratings are declining. Anyways, I think Clay Travis sums it up nicely in the CNN interview where this hostess freaks out. I'll just play a short snippet of this.
You can't have this opinion. It's too conservative. We're not going to allow it. I think that's a bad move. I'm a First Amendment absolutist. I believe in only two things completely, the First Amendment and boobs. And so once they made the decision that they were...
So basically, he's not saying fire everybody. He's saying have an open marketplace of ideas. Look, first off, this CNN hostess, I could play the whole snippet if you want, but this chick, this anchor on CNN started freaking out that he said boobs. First off, CNN had a New Year's special where a comedian, Kathy Griffin, came on and said nipples like 5,000 times throughout the whole show. And they were all laughing their ass off. Well, that's it, dude. Apparently, a guy can't say he likes boobs on fucking national television. So, anyways, I mean, it's like it's very obvious that there's just like a liberal agenda going on. CNN, fake news. They get all mad about that, but don't care about Kathy Griffin saying nipples all the time. Look, it's very obvious that guys like boobs. This is not a crazy concept, okay?
Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I mean, it's a billion-dollar industry in the plastic surgery world, and you know, women are always trying to find like the best bras and make the rack look good. I mean, like, let's be honest here. I mean, this is not revolutionary. So, anyways, one, ESPN ratings are declining. They're getting too liberal. And you know, Clay Travis said boobs on the air, so I want to talk about it a little bit. Personally, even today, watching the games, the Steelers did not come out during the halftime during the amendment in the beginning. But Alejandro Villanueva walked out. He's a Army veteran, and ultimate respect to that guy. But I think NFL's getting a little too into politics, and that's why the ratings are declining.
Yeah, the ratings have definitely dipped quite a bit in the past, at least to begin this 2017 season. All right, so let's switch over to NBA. Wanted to talk a little bit about the Melo to OKC trade. So the Knicks trade Carmelo Anthony to the Thunder for Enes Kanter, Doug McDermott, and a 2018 second-round pick. You know, this comes off Carmelo extending the list of teams he would waive his no-trade clause for. Originally, he only had Houston, but after they really couldn't work out a deal, he extended the list to include OKC and the Cavaliers. Quickly, the Knicks made a move with OKC. Carmelo now joins Russell Westbrook and Paul George to make kind of an interesting trio. You know, I'm really not sure how this offense is going to run. Westbrook is a ball-dominant guard, and Melo tends to stop the ball movement once it gets to him. Still a great move, I think, for Sam Presti and the Thunder, who are desperately trying to keep Westbrook from leaving. I think it's a good move for the Knicks, too, who, you know, got the most from a player who was clearly going to leave. And, you know, before they traded for him, he was a potential buyout candidate. So what do you think about this trade for Carmelo Anthony, Derek?
Well, as a Rockets fan, it's kind of a bummer that we didn't get him. But in the end, Ryan Anderson's contract was too much. The Knicks didn't want any part of that. And, you know, Melo named a couple teams and he went to the OKC. So this is actually pretty deadly. I think Thunder could make some big moves this season with Westbrook and George and Anthony all combined playing. You have three all-stars together. I think Knicks are obviously in a big rebuild mode. Enes Kanter, you know, he's pretty good. And Dougie McBuckets, he's all right. He's a bench rider. But it's pretty obvious Knicks are kind of like resetting. And Carmelo made it fairly obvious that he wanted to leave. So it sucks that the Rockets didn't get him. But the Thunder could be actually deadly now.
Yeah, I think it definitely gives them all the offensive firepower they really need. I think Westbrook probably, you know, in terms of this is really all to try to make Westbrook stay there. I still think he ultimately leaves, but I think it makes it pretty close. But the reason I think he leaves is I think that the dominoes that fall before him are much more likely to go. I think Paul George definitely goes to LA. I think every single day that goes by, LeBron is getting closer and closer to going to LA. So I think, you know, he likely leaves just because so much movement is already heading that way. You know, let's give a top five ranking of the Western Conference, Derek, really quick. So off the top of your head.
Yeah, just think about it right now. I'd probably put obviously Warriors number one. I'd probably put Spurs at number two, even though I'm not sure what's going to go on with that. I think they're still going to play well under Pop, but Spurs two, I'll probably do Rockets and Thunder at three and four, but that's going to be really close there. And five might be, I guess maybe Portland.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we don't really have to do a top five. It's really just the top four. For me, it's it's obviously the Golden State Warriors. Then two, I got to give it to your Rockets, man. I think, you know, Chris Paul really presents a lot of problems for the Spurs every time they play him, just because he's so smart on the court. But then I got to go three with the Spurs. I think they'll still be able to play really good. I think Kawhi actually might be able to get an MVP season this year, just because, you know, Westbrook's not going to get the stats he did last year. Same thing with Harden, likely. You know, the Warriors kind of all cancel each other out from getting an MVP. You could still see LeBron, I guess, getting an MVP if he really wants it, but I could also see him like sitting out some games and not really going for it too much. But so I have one Warriors, two Rockets, three Spurs, and then four would probably go the Thunder. I just, you know, so you think of like what that lineup would look like. It'd probably be Russell Westbrook at the one, Paul George at a two or a three spot, probably a two, and then Carmelo at either the three or the four, and then Steven Adams is kind of more of a defensive center at five. It's a good offensive lineup. I think it kind of makes for some mismatches for many teams, but I just don't see, I mean, you know, Melo's not known for his defense. Russell Westbrook actually has been known to be a pretty bad defensive guard, just because he overattacks for many positions and leaves himself vulnerable for kickouts. But, you know, I still think that they're a solid number four, but it definitely makes the race more interesting. You know, the other thing I wanted to talk about really quick, Derek, we hadn't had this on their list, but is the East just dead now? Is it like a fit? Can we name it just officially dead?
Look, I mean, everybody's just talking Cavs or Celtics. I mean, why do we even play the season anymore? I mean, we all know that those two teams are going to be in the Eastern Conference Finals, and we'll see who goes to the final game. But, I mean, East is turning irrelevant. Most of the stars are going West Coast. One thing that's interesting about this whole thing is everybody's talking LeBron in L.A., but if he goes to L.A., now you have to fight all those West Coast teams to get to the finals. So, I mean, I'm sure LeBron can do it. You know, I'm sure he is as well, but you know, do you want to go to the Western Conference and fight all these big monster teams, or do you want a guaranteed finals appearance? So that's something LeBron's gonna have to think about going into next season.
No kidding. All right, so let's talk let's bring up our next bullshit story. I'm sure you saw this, Derek. It was pretty much all over the sports news, just because I think it came out on like a Tuesday. Excuse me, let me get my beer over here. Sorry. It came out on like a Tuesday when like the news outlets was there wasn't much going on. So we're going to talk about KD's fake Twitter accounts. So KD was pretty much, here's what happened. KD was getting into it with a fan who was like criticizing him for leaving OKC like everyone else has and going into Golden State. So KD responds to this fan, but what he doesn't realize is when he responds to one of these fans, he replied in third person with his actual Twitter account. So with his Twitter, he said this tweet. He didn't like the organization or playing for Billy Donovan. His roster wasn't that good. It was just him and Russ. Imagine taking Russ off that team. See how bad they were. KD can't win a championship with those cats. So pretty much, in essence, he has like these fake like Twitter accounts where he responds to trolls trying to pose as like a random fan who like sticks up for him. And with these, he, you know, and so I don't know why he would have these. And then he quickly comes out, says he messed up, admitted he was dumb for tweeting it. But what do you think about this story, Derek?
Personally, I mean, he admitted that he does it. I have to give him props. You know, a lot of people would have said I got hacked or whatever. He actually said, yeah, that's what I do. So, it's pretty damn petty. You know, you just want to ship, you know, like, just go to the beach or something, you know, while you respond to Twitter trolls, but, pretty hilarious.
Yeah. He said like the counts are, I was going to say too, you know, props for him at least just like owning up to it, you know, instead of saying the typical I'm hacked. But yeah, he said that the Twitter accounts are for communicating with his family or friends or something, but obviously that's not true because he's responding to just random trolls. You know, this kind of goes with something that I've thought about KD for quite some time. And I think that he just seems to have thin skin. You know, he, for someone who's probably, you know, at worst, the second best player in the league right now, you would think he wouldn't give a damn about some random, you know, what some random fan thinks about him leaving. Especially, you know, and you're right, especially after winning a championship. But he has always seemed to just take criticism very harshly. You know, we saw it in OKC when a reporter wrote an unfavorable article about him and he turned on the media and started being rude to them. You know, so do you think KD has this weak skin? And, like, you know, if you do, like, why do you think, you know, he does this stuff, Derek?
Well, I think, you know, starting in OKC, he was made fun of for being a cupcake and abandoning his team. I think that can stick with you for a long time. And maybe got to his head a little bit. And, you know, I don't, you know, as a man, you know, how he is, you know, maybe he just has thin skin and everything like that. But, you know, when you get roasted that long for leaving OKC, I mean, maybe it gets to your head. Maybe that's how he wanted to fight it, whatever. But, yeah, bad play, in my opinion.
Yeah, you know, he's, like, super dramatic, too. After, you know, because he also, you know, if you notice in the tweet, he completely throws Billy Donovan under the bus, you know, and says he didn't like, you know, he didn't like him. He says the rest of the roster is terrible. Like, threw a lot of players under the bus. And, you know, Enes Kanter is one of the ones, after getting traded for, you know, for Melo, he quickly was just like, please, Thunder, please beat the Golden State Warriors for me, because he does not like KD. You know, after it was all said, he said, he's so dramatic. I haven't slept in 2 days, 2 nights. I haven't ate. I feel so pissed at myself, and I'm mad I brought someone into this. I just don't understand why KD feels the need to get all riled up about this stuff.
Can we be honest about the Thunder? They were up 3-1 against the Warriors that won the ship. Okay, this team is not horrible. I mean, I don't know what he's talking about. You got Steven Adams. I mean, Kanter is nothing to frown at. You know, they had a pretty good roster. So the fact that he's thrown everybody under the bus, his former teammates, everything like that, I just don't get it. That roster is not that bad. They also picked up Oladipo and everything like that. The Thunder is nothing to frown at. I think they're okay, and I can't believe that he's talking that much crap about that roster, because they almost went to the finals and could have damn near won the whole thing.
No kidding. All right, so let's talk about the main bullshit story that we have for the people today. It is, you know, I want to deem this episode like father, like Sandusky. So Jerry Sandusky, if you remember back from his Penn State days, was just this complete disgusting monster of a human being. Molested, you know, many, many children in his time with Penn State. Joe Paterno was involved. It was like 30 years ago, and then they just found out. So Jerry Sandusky's son was just arrested and charged with child sex abuse. Unbelievable. So apparently he was charged with 14 felony counts involving two girls, including solicitation of a minor, solicitation of involuntary deviant sexual intercourse, all kinds of nasty stuff. This guy's 41 years old. You know, I guess this stuff just runs in the family, Derek, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, doesn't it have to? I mean, if unless this is going on for decades before, your father got arrested for doing all this stuff, and now, you know, the son's in jail for the same thing. So unless it was happening way before, you'd think not to, like, do that. But, you know, this Sandusky thing, what a blemish on Penn State's record. I feel really bad about that whole thing, and I just can't believe that the son did the same thing. I guess the only thing I can think of is, one, it runs in the family, or two, you know, did the dad mess with the son? You know, I have no idea, but yeah, it's very fishy. It's very fishy.
That's some Jerry Springer shit right there.
Yeah.
All right, so we have one more story. We're a little under on time, so I might as well bring this up, Derek. So I kind of teased this a little bit in our stuff we were going to talk about. So this story, I just really don't understand people sometimes. So a McDonald's worker gave birth to a baby at work and tried to flush it. Talk about mom of the year. So this lady apparently was like having, like, she kept telling her coworker she was having, you know, stomach issues and like lady issues and like kept having to go to the bathroom. Well, then like at one part, you know, she had to go in there for a long time. So then a coworker goes in there and discovers a large amount of blood all over the bathroom floor. And then she peers over the stall and she sees the mom literally pushing on the back of her baby while flushing the toilet. You know, if you didn't want to go to McDonald's before, here's your number one reason to never go again. So what do you think about McDonald's Big Macs right now, Derek?
Look, man, I'm a huge proponent of the Big Macs, but this is not cool at all. I honestly, I can't believe this is a real story. That mom is needs to go to hell or whatever, but I'm still going to eat Big Macs.
Still going to eat Big Macs. I like it. Yeah, I mean, just like the story too was written horribly. It was like, no word yet on whether the baby will suffer mental like harm from this. I'm like, no shit, it's gonna suffer mental harm. Like, could you imagine growing up and like someone having to tell you, oh yeah, when you're like a baby, your mom tried to flush you, so keep that in mind.
I don't think you're gonna come back from that, man. You're probably gonna have a hard upbringing knowing that your mom tried to flush you down the toilet. So I don't know. That's a really horrible story.
Definitely harder to come back. We still got a lot. So did you see that one story about this jogger just running up and shitting in people's yards?
Well, I saw it, and the first thing I thought was, well, I mean, she might be some hippie person that wants to do, like, compost or whatever and doesn't like using water or, like, using paper to wipe her ass or whatever. But the more I watched, like, the news and read some stories about it, I think this woman might legitimately be insane.
Yeah, I mean – I just kept seeing, like, at first, you know, you see this stuff and you always see these like crazy news articles on like shitty websites, like, and then you just think they're a hashtag fake news. And then I started seeing it like on more and more bigger platforms. I'm like, oh my God, this lady really is just running around and shitting on everyone's yards. You know, I think, America as a whole is just losing its mind. We're one of the few ones left, Derek, that are just trying to stay humble in this modern crazy world, but don't know how long we're going to keep at it.
Look, man, I mean, I don't know what's going on, but why can't we just do our jobs and watch football on the weekends and be sane? I feel like everybody's freaking out now. And what happened to just watching sports and being a normal person? Who knows?
No kidding. Anything else you want to talk about, Derek? We got time.
One thing I guess I'll bring up right now is NFL ratings are a 20-year low. So
yeah, we talked about that earlier. But, yeah, you know, that is something to bring up.
Yeah, so NFL ratings apparently are at a 20-year low. So when I think about this a little longer, I think there's a lot of reasons going on with this. I personally think that the politics associated with the league is killing the league. They need to disassociate from politics in general. Because in my opinion, if a player, you know, if they kneel during the anthem or whatever, and they're trying to stand for social rights, I mean, that's, you can do that. But if I was an owner of an NFL franchise, I would tell them, you're working for me and you can keep the politics out of my game when you come to work. And, you know, when you go home or on Twitter or whatever, you can say whatever you want. But when you come to work, you know, don't bring the politics to work. I think a lot of people, and personally, it's not me, but I think a lot of people are not watching games because of these politics associated with NFL. NFL and sports in general is supposed to be your escape from politics. And now it seems to be merged together, and a lot of people are tired of it. I personally, if someone kneels during an anthem, that's not going to stop me from watching the game. I might not agree with it, but, you know, that's not going to ruin the whole product for me. But I know a lot of people out there are very mad about that and are not watching games because of that. There's another reason, I think. The games are just boring. I mean, the first 2 weeks, the games are really, really boring. I mean, you're talking I think you're talking about a decade low amount of yards per game. And I attribute this to one main reason, I think. I think it's the offensive line is not practicing as much, or the Players Association made that agreement where they practice 2 weeks less or whatever. You know, I would argue that offensive linemen have to, you know, practice the most. with blocking schemes and stuff like that. So it's very obvious the first 2 weeks that the offensive line was not there. You have a 10-year high in sacks. It's really ugly football, man. I can only name a couple programs that actually played well the first 2 weeks. So, yeah, I mean, NFL's ratings are declining. I think NFL is going to be okay. It's going to get better as time goes on. But two main points here is I think, it's very obvious that the O-line's not practicing enough, and it's pretty ugly on the offensive line. I think defensively they figured out the flag scheme and they can cover that shit pretty good. But also the politics, NFL needs to totally disassociate themselves with politics to begin with, because it's getting bad. It's getting ugly. The Steelers did not come out for the anthem. It's getting ugly. They need to get out of this.
Yeah, this was obviously probably the biggest day of protest in that form that I've seen, ever. I mean, even in the Sunday night football game, it was almost 50-50 in terms of players sitting / kneeling to standing. What I do agree with that a lot of people are probably not watching solely because of that. And, you know, regardless of your beliefs on this, I think ESPN and the media in general has missed that there is a large, and I mean a large, large, large amount of people who feel so strongly about not kneeling and not sitting for that anthem that they would not watch the games. I mean, and I think they're missing that. And I think it's definitely impacting those ratings, combined with the lack of good offensive line play, which has just made for atrocious offenses in the first two games. Their first 2 weeks. I think combined with that, you know, there's not that many teams either that are doing that great that, you know, a lot of people really will watch no matter what for. I mean, you know, and I just think that the media in general is just missing that. There is a large amount of people who feel so strongly about that they will not watch a game. And, you know, I think that's something to look at. And, you know, maybe you're right. Maybe, you know, the NFL should keep politics out of sports, but what I will say is the ratings are definitely something to watch, because, you know, for many, many years, people have been saying that the NFL will die at some point. They've been saying that NBA will rule king once people realize that the NFL is no longer anywhere near a safe game for people to play. They think that the NBA will take over and that the NFL will slowly die, you know, and this definitely supports that. If the NFL cannot keep up its ratings, then the money goes. And when the money goes, people stop, you know, players are not like getting paid as much. And when players are not getting paid as much, they're not going to risk their lives and their wealth or their health going forward. So I think that's all about. Anything else, Derek?
Hey, why not? The news broke a couple of days ago. Let's talk about Aaron Hernandez and the CTE thing real quick, because that's pretty big news a couple of days ago. If you guys don't know, Aaron Hernandez has stage 3 CTE, which means he has a 67-year-old brain at the age of 27 before he committed suicide in jail. I think this is a huge deal. I personally think for NFL, if you're a grown adult, you assume those risks to, you know, live like a king essentially for, you know, your livelihood. But college football could die because of this. This is a huge deal, because Aaron Hernandez only played Florida football for 3 years and Patriots football for 3 years. I mean, he was playing younger too, but I mean, you're talking about serious competitive level only 6 years. I can't justify any kid going to school and playing for a scholarship when, you know, your whole life ahead of you could be screwed. So this is big news. I can see a big lawyer stepping in and justifying crimes or something for ex-NFL players, stuff like that. This could get dirty real fast. I think in particular, college football is screwed.
Yeah. The one thing I will say is that there is that one other study too, where like 112 ex-NFL players submitted their brains for CTE scanning, and out of like 112, 111 of them had it, something like that. I know it was like all but one. You know, while there is a little bit of a kind of a data skew in there, because if you think you have CTE, you're probably going to want to submit it, so that's probably what happened. But that's still that's 99%+ of players that had CTE. And I totally agree. You know, I think the pool of players that the NFL is gathering from is probably shrinking a little bit every single year. As you know, it may not come from the inner city, impoverished communities, which, you know, that they still would risk their, you know, their health in order to gain a way out, in order to gain a lot of money. But for more, you know, these wealthy communities, like, you know, Austin Westlake, you know, like stuff like that, like, you know, you're less likely to risk your health on a chance at, you know, playing in just the college level than you normally would. And so I definitely agree with you. It's definitely something to monitor. And if the NFL can't keep those ratings up, like, bye-bye, because it will go quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Derek, I don't know if you noticed, did you like your drop at the beginning of this?
Look, man, I'm very honored that that's your first drop ever, but yeah, I mean, you know, let me get some redhead sluts over here.
Me get a bunch of redhead sluts over here.
I mean, yeah, I say it pretty frequently if I'm getting around for the guys, so appreciate it.
All right, so I think that's about it for Derek. I am Joey Morales. Follow us at the BBB Podcast on iTunes, at the BBB Pod on Twitter. Feel free to send in some questions on the Twitter machine anytime you want something answered, or like a funny topic for us to talk about. Maybe it's one of these stories me and Derek love talking about, whatever comes our way. Make sure to leave us a fat 5-star review on the iTunes. And for Derek, I am Joey. See you later, folks.
Thanks, guys.